Hi, this is Barry List at Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. How do executives make major decisions, like choosing to acquire another company? Sometimes the human aspect of multi-million dollar decisions is startling. In today's segment, we talk to Professor Maurice Levy of the University of British Columbia. Professor Levy, along with Kai Li and Feng Zhang, also of UBC, have written a study entitled Deal or No Deal, Hormones and the Mergers and Acquisitions Game. It appears in the September 2010 issue of the Informs Journal of Management Science. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you for inviting me.
The idea of measuring biological function and relating it to the behavior of business people is fascinating. How did you decide upon this avenue of research?
Well, it was triggered largely by some research that's been conducted by Terence Burnham of Harvard, laboratory testing of something called the ultimatum game, where there are two players, a proposer and a responder. They're responsible for dividing up a sum of money, a fixed sum of money. It's non-repeating, so there's no strategies to try and influence the future. And the question was, would they just make the right economic decision, or would their personality or their chemistry intervene? And it was found that the testosterone intervened. In this particular case, since it was laboratory test, they were able to measure directly the testosterone of both players by swabbing their mouths just up to and just prior to the playing of the game. And it turned out that people pursued more than economic objectives.
It's interesting because I gather that at places like Harvard and MIT, they are trying these different kinds of experiments that relate behavior to economics.
Yes, and normally we would think that they would approach the logical equilibrium and Nash equilibrium. And in the case of the ultimatum game, they were given $40. These were pairs of students. They had to divide the $40. They were given two alternatives. They could offer the proposer that has the $40 to offer, so the responder can offer either $5 or $25. And the equilibrium that one would imagine in normal rational decision-making would be that $5 is offered and $5 is accepted, because the acceptor, the responder, knows what the proposer is thinking, the proposer knows what the responder is thinking. But it turned out that while it usually generally was $5 being offered, there were a large number of situations where the money was rejected, which is not in the interest of either of them, because then they end up both of them with nothing at all. And yet they did it, and it turned out that it was the high testosterone types, in this case the responders, that were responsible.
And how did it lead you and your colleagues to jump off to the next step of this study?
Well, there's a sum of money being divided between two sides, and where testosterone, which is a hormone that's related to male-seeking dominance, and we thought, well, this is likely to play a role in the corporate sector, where you have a responder and a bidder in the case of a merger or a takeover.
Could you review your major findings?
One of the findings has to do with acquisitiveness, which one would think would be related to dominance, because if you're seeking dominance, you want to be dominant over a bigger kingdom. And I should add that testosterone plays a role throughout the animal kingdom. It's not just among humans, Homo sapiens, that you have this effect. So one of the effects that we found is inquisitiveness, that young, and then by implication high testosterone types, given our proxying for testosterone, are 4% more likely to try to acquire another company, to form a merger or an acquisition.
Is that a significant number, 4%?
4%, and certainly in the statistical sense, it's significant. But if you were looking at the value of acquisitions and mergers that take place in a typical year, which is in the trillions of dollars, 4% is probably, it's not a small amount to be ignored. And anyway, that's one of the effects. That's not the biggest effect. The biggest effect is the attempt to acquire other companies where there's some drop deals, where deals are withdrawn. If testosterone is to play a role, it's likely to influence the extent to which initiated deals go to completion. And we find there that 20% of the deals are dropped if the players, particularly the bidder in this particular case, if the bidder is a high testosterone type, in the sense that being young, as I say again by implication, high testosterone. Another effect, which is smaller numerically but again non-trivial, is the effect on tender offers. Tender offers are when you go around the management of the company and go directly to the shareholders to see if they will agree to a merger or an acquisition, and they're 2% more likely in the event of having a high testosterone player. In this particular case, it's the target player, the target CEO that makes the difference. Target CEOs are the ones that are presumably turning down a friendly bid and forcing the bidder to go through past the management and onto the shareholders.
We spoke offline about the fact that it isn't possible in a study like this to measure testosterone directly. How did you get around the problem, and what is the problem?
Well, the problem is that we're arguing that it's testosterone, a hormone that's leading to these outcomes, and yet we don't have the ability to go back and take a review of each of these mergers and acquisitions which are in our database, which go back into the 1970s. And figure out what would have been the testosterone of the players at that time. I mean, you know, in retrospect, we wish that people had been swapping the mouths of proposers and responders whenever these things were occurring, because we can't do that. So what we've done as an alternative sort of is two-pronged in a sense. First of all, we've tried to find what variables are very closely connected to testosterone levels. And age is one which is particularly age at around middle age, where testosterone drops off substantially. We did try some other things, whether the CEOs were married. Unfortunately, for us at least, virtually all of them were married, so it wasn't a distinguishing variable. Numbers of children. We tried a number of other things. These are, you know, instruments or proxies for the level of testosterone. And the other thing that we did is to see if there were alternative explanations that could explain why, in this particular case, age is so closely related to the, you know, premiums and so on in the financial dimension. So we looked at to see whether there was an effect of the CEO's horizon or experience. So we have measures of how long they've been CEOs and, you know, whether they stay in their job for a long period of time. And so, but we found that these alternative explanations didn't seem to tell us why this was happening, so we were left with the explanation that we favor, which is that it has to do with testosterone. And, you know, testosterone is a very powerful chemical hormone, and it affects behavior in a wide variety of situations.
You mentioned that we look at age. Why didn't you use age and set aside testosterone as something to study?
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, age being the variable that we end up using, and we did try, by the way, different age points at which people would shift from being young to old. 45 is the one that we've presented the results for, but it's pretty robust to taking different ages. We could conclude the paper by saying that age has these effects, and then it wouldn't lead to testosterone. But hopefully by ruling out the typically investigated effects of age, these alternative explanations, we're left with the one that we have. I'd like to draw an analogy here, and I think it's to the credit of management science that they were willing to take the chance on the paper like this. You know, given that it should have, you know, we should have, at least in a perfect world, used testosterone. I like to tell the story of the man that was looking for his key under the lamppost, and a friend comes over and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm looking for my key." He said, "Would you lose it here under the lamppost?" And he said, "No, I actually lost it over there." "Well, why aren't you looking over there?" "Well, because it's dark over there." You know, we have to take chances, and hopefully this will lead other people to make some investigations, and of course our results stand to be confirmed or rejected, but I think we open up a new avenue of research, and I think it's an important avenue. Human behavior presumably plays roles. I mean, here I couldn't imagine a better setting where dominance is going to be influencing outcomes than in the CEO's role in the merger and acquisition process.
Let's return to your findings. That 20% figure that you quoted earlier about the likelihood to withdraw an offer, that seems to be saying that it has a tremendous implication for the way business is done throughout the world. Could you explain a little bit?
Yes. You actually referred to them as drop deals in your news release, and I just made note of that. I wish we'd use that term. It's a nice alliteration, and it's what goes on. Yeah, I mean, if you think, again, of the size of this process of merger and an acquisition, and let's face it, you know, we normally think that this is rationalization of an industry, I mean, when would you have a merger or an acquisition? When presumably there are economies to be enjoyed from them, and you know, because perhaps there are economies of scale or there's given market power. I mean, there are different explanations. I mean, there is an explanation of mergers and acquisitions where you're trying to create a more powerful monopoly, which of course is not in the national interest. But generally, we think that's because the companies can be run better in a merged form. So if we can argue that hormones get in the way of the rational outcome, you know, we're saying that that's a pretty important dimension of the economy. In a sense, it's showing that the economy is not running as well as one would hope when it comes to this particular dimension of decision-making.
To take a look at one of your other findings, you look primarily at the executive making the bid. And as you mentioned before, in one instance, you look at the CEO receiving the bid and the relation between the CEO age and likelihood of a tender offer. Why was the recipient in this case the important one to look at? And tell us again what you found.
Okay, so we found that it's the age of the responder, the target company's CEO, that's responsible for it going to a tender offer. Because ultimately that's the one that's going to say, well, we have no deal, there's no deal on. And the bidder, and I'm using the terminology now of Burnham of the ultimatum game, bidder and responder, you know, the bidder says, well, we still think that we're better off owning your company or merging the companies, and so we'll pursue it anyhow, and we'll send a circular round to your shareholders, which they're entitled to do. So it's still a surprise. And that, by the way, is the outcome that's consistent with the outcome of Burnham's ultimatum game study, that it's the responder that's more responsible than the bidder, than the proposer. I'm sort of interchanging these terms because the analogy is so close between the ultimatum game and the merger and acquisition game.
What data did you examine to reach your conclusions?
Okay, well, we have a database of mergers and acquisitions that has several hundred, close to 400 different events, and you know, we went through biographies and, you know, digging up the ages of the CEOs. The database was, it's Thomson database that we used, and it has lots of information about the companies, and specifically focusing on mergers and acquisitions. And there are certain classes of mergers and acquisitions that we covered. We wanted to make sure that they weren't trivial, so taking over at least 5% in terms of value of the existing company and so on. So we sorted the data by a number of ways and did a bunch of robustness tests. As I mentioned, we tried different ages of CEOs to see if that made a huge difference. We settled on 45, which, you know, it gives pretty much the same results as other ages. We even tried a whole bunch of different ages, you know, 45 to 50 and 55 to 60 and so on, to see whether there was a sort of hierarchical effect, and there was too. So there's substantially more in the paper than these three main results. But the three main results did have to do with acquisitiveness, 4% more likely, it would drop deals 20% more likely, and tender offers 2% more likely.
Overall, what does your study teach us about CEO behavior, especially among the younger executives you tracked?
You know, I've been watching so many narratives and so many stories, news stories unfold of mergers and acquisitions that have gone smoothly and others which have been dreadful and had all sorts of acrimony associated with them. I'm thinking of, say, Hewlett Packard some time ago. And, you know, to realize that, you know, the human dimension makes a difference. I remember telling this to, I was out with a fishing buddy and talking about the results with a lawyer who's a merger and acquisition lawyer, and he said, you found the testosterone plays a role in that process? I mean, so did you think it would be otherwise?
Ah, that's interesting.
Here we are talking about people who've reached their positions because they want to be in a dominant role. They want to have power and control over resources and people. And so it's no big surprise that a population like that, when studied for their behavior, would show a role of testosterone in a particular dimension such as mergers and acquisitions. You know, I mean, presumably in other dimensions too. We chose this one because the data was readily available to us, and we were already familiar with that from earlier studies that we've done involving such things as gender and in terms of risk preferences of CEOs. So we... you know, this was a natural avenue for us to pursue.
Is there a strategic lesson here for companies that may bid or those that may receive a bid? Should boards rein in younger, more aggressive executives who may not pursue the company's best interests?
That's going another step. Yeah, and if one thinks that there's value destruction here, in the sense that there are opportunities for creating value that aren't pursued, if you've got a young, fiery CEO, particularly if it's a bidder CEO, and you're thinking that because they're the ones that are going to cause the drop deals and so on, and you think that better keep an eye on them, and maybe they're making decisions which are not in the overall interest of the company. You know, the boards of directors don't meet every day. I mean, they have executives that do keep more in touch, but they meet periodically, and things can unravel while they're in absentia. And I think it's probably not a bad idea to keep an eye on certain people. And you know, maybe what they're doing is wonderful for the company in most dimensions, and you know, their aggression and ambition is serving people well. But if there's an area where it doesn't serve them well, I mean, there might be missed opportunity. I think it's not a bad idea just to keep an eye on them.
Which leads us to the other study that you mentioned earlier about men and women and merger and acquisition behavior. I gather that your earlier study says that female executives negotiate more favorable purchase prices than their male counterparts. Could you review those findings a little bit for us?
Yes, we were looking at the role of having women as directors on the board of directors of companies. And the reason, by the way, of doing that rather than CEOs, we thought of CEOs, and of course the connection between testosterone, which is the male hormone associated with males, although it does occur with women, it's very more influential with women. But there were so few CEOs that were women that we decided to use the percentage of women on the boards of companies as an influence. And we were interested, for example, in the bid premium. So the bid premium is the extent to which the price that's actually paid exceeds the price that was on a company's stock prior to the announcement of a merger or an acquisition. So typically there's a 20 to 30, even sometimes 40% premium paid when it comes to a takeover or a merger for buying these shares.
So if a stock is trading at 100, then the premium would be to offer 120?
Yeah, that would be a 20% premium. That's right. And that's very common, 20%. I'd say 20 to 40%. We've computed the average for our database, and it's in that sort of range. And the idea was to see whether when there was a woman, the more women on the board of both companies, the target and the bidding companies, what happens to the size of that bid premium? And it's noticeably smaller in the case of every 10% more independent. It had to be independent female directors. There was approximately a 9% lower bid premium for the bidder and 12% lower bid premium for every 10% more women on the board for the target company. So that's not a trivial amount. 10% of the board being, typically one person or just less than one person. But the bid premium itself then being approximately 10% smaller, say 9% for the bidder and 12% for the target. You said that they bargain better. Of course, it's a question of which side you view. If the price is lower, that looks good if it's from the bidder side because they're getting it for less. But it's obviously if you're the target and the price is lower, you're getting less for your company. So you can't conclude that women are better bargainers. What we did relate it to was some literature that showed that women tend to be more risk-averse than men, and they're less confident to pursue new ventures, which, of course, a merger or an acquisition involves a major new venture. So we think it's more consistent with that, because risk aversion comes in because, remember, when you're taking over another company, there's a certain amount of risk that's going to be taken on the income stream. And women would value that risk, would be more afraid of that risk, and so would value the risk more highly, in other words, pay less for a company and receive less if they share that point of view. And the effect of trying a new venture makes sense too. If women are that more reluctant to go into waving their swords and aggressive moves, if they're much more cautious about new ventures, then then they're not going to be bidding quite so wildly. So I think that in some ways it's more interesting than just finding that women are good or bad bargainers. Our results were quite consistent with these other views of the literature.
Are there other metrics that we might apply to both the study published in Management Science and the one on women and mergers and acquisitions? Are there other metrics that we might apply to both studies that might leave us characterizing these men, or in the latest study, the young men, as being smarter and a better asset to their companies than the outcomes seem to suggest?
Well, we could be looking at rates of return that are enjoyed by companies and the extent to which rates of return are influenced by board composition, gender diversity, and of boards, and whether they're males or females. And there is evidence on this, too, that even though they're paying less, in some sense, the returns that seem to be enjoyed by women on boards, or women CEOs, when you have enough data to study them, they seem to be doing a better job. So I think what it's saying is that there's an important role in corporate decision-making, because we're not talking always about asset pricing here and about stock prices. There's an important element of behavior. I've spent perhaps the last 15 years looking at the role of various factors in behavioral finance. I've shown, for example, that there's a seasonal pattern in returns due to risk aversion that tends to rise during the fall, during the autumn. As the days get shorter, it's related to seasonal affective disorder, and come the new year, and prices tend to recover, and it's a regularity that it's hard to explain by any other means, and there's various other things that I've thought of, but these are all involving the stock market. Where I seem to be going now is looking at it on the sort of corporate level, where corporate behavior is being affected by behavioral factors, and behavioral factors, one of the obvious ones was hormones. I think my imagination is running out on more dimensions, but probably will come up with something.
We only have time for one more question. What business lessons do these two studies about gender and M&As and corporate boards teach us?
Well, they teach me that the expression used by John Maynard Keynes about animal instincts is just bang on. You know, we are animals. We behave relatively predictable as animals. We're not pursuing just strictly economic goals, but power goals and other dimensions of behavior, which are very important for the value of the economy. You know, we're dealing with big amounts of money. I mean, mergers and acquisitions, you think back of some of the major oil companies and communication companies, there's a lot at stake here, and a better understanding of them, I think, is pretty important for everyone. Don't just think that everything's going to solve out in terms of normal levels of economic rationality. They just don't.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Maurice Levy. Professor, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your questions.
And thank you for listening to the Science at Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.